Okay, thank you for coming, so many people. And it's good to see you. I think I've met many of you in other places. First, I'd like to thank the people from the Root Institute and FPMT all over for writing, I think we wrote about a year ago, and then we started to plan this teaching here. And I'd like to thank you for hospitality. I think hosting us Dharma students is sometimes the hardest kind of people. and I hope that all the staff will joyfully put up with our mental afflictions. Somebody wrote to me, I sent them to Sarah Monastery for a couple of months of study, and then the first night they wrote to me and told me how bad the monks were, and I said, that's why we go live in a monastery, you know, because we're trying to improve ourselves, you know. So I think same for Dharma students. So thank you for having us, and I hope you have a good time. And please be thoughtful of the staff and help them, and be thoughtful of the other people here. I think that's just a basic rule of thumb. You know, oftentimes it's easy to work for all sentient beings, but very hard to be nice to the person next to you. You know, so please try. Okay, on to the subject, and I'm not going to do much other kind of talk. I feel very strongly about this subject. It's my favorite subject of all time. It's my favorite scripture of all time. Most important place of all time. I'm going into 3-year retreats shortly, so for me, it's this is the last chance I'll have to teach it for a long time. And very, very holy. There's a thing called Path of Seeing. There's 5 traditional levels of spiritual realization. The 3rd one is called Path of Seeing. Path of Seeing, it means that you see emptiness directly. It's not something you see with your eyes. It's something you see in deep meditation. And the whole purpose of studying Buddhism and the whole purpose of all the work that you do, you know, all the efforts you make in your practice, all the efforts you make to study, all the reason you become ordained, the reason for everything that you do, serve your lamas, is to get to the path of seeing, is to see emptiness directly. When you reach that point, they call you stream enterer. I think if they made it nowadays, they'd call it conveyor belt. It means you're on your way out. You know, if you reach this particular point in your spiritual career, you are human belt on the jiva, unstoppably on your way out. Nobody can stop you after that. You're on your way out, okay? And that's what the stream enterer means. Stream enterer means somebody who's seen emptiness directly, directly in deep meditation, okay? It takes like 20 minutes, okay? The whole experience, the actual direct experience of emptiness takes about 20 to 30 minutes. It's extremely rare. It's extremely special for it to happen. If you have that one experience for 20 to 30 minutes, then when you come out of it, when you come down out of that meditation, then for about the next 12 hours, you have these amazing experiences. And we're going to describe them in this course. But those experiences all grouped together are called the 4 Noble Truths. Noble is a bad translation of Arya. Arya means anyone who's seen emptiness directly. They should have been called the 4 Truths for emptiness, people who've seen emptiness directly or something. Noble is a mistranslation of Arya. So, after you come down out of that half hour, let's say you did it in the morning, 10 o'clock or something, then for the rest of the day until you go to sleep, you have these extraordinary realizations happen to you, more than in your whole life, or we would say in countless lifetimes before, that within that 12 hours are packed and grouped into 4 categories, all these amazing experiences. For example, I'm a car salesman, I'm trying to sell you on seeing emptiness directly, okay? You see the future lives directly, okay? You see them directly. You're aware, maybe for the first time, that you really do have future lives, and you see them directly. You don't see like your father's name in the 3rd life after that or something like that. You have a direct, what we call yogic perception of of the general content of your lives, say for the next 7 lives, you see that directly. You're directly aware of roughly what kind of life you'll have, how it will be, how many there will be, what kind of parents you'll have, what kind of teachers you'll have. You see that directly. You see directly your own enlightenment, and you're aware that after a certain amount of time you will become enlightened. And you, it's a direct realization of that and a direct perception of that. You know how long it will take. And really, for the first time, you confirm that such a thing really exists. You see, I mean, we're Buddhists, but you really don't know if a Buddha exists. You know what I mean? On that day, you know, and you see directly your own enlightenment. You know what they won't call you when you get enlightened. And that's something special. You can read other people's minds for about a day. Okay? You are aware that you have seen directly the body of a Buddha. Okay? Like you call it the Dhammakaya, the part of a Buddha's being that you have made direct contact, and you have made direct contact with enlightened beings. Okay? You appreciate tankas after that. Okay? You know, we have all these refuge vows that say you're supposed to respect tankas and images, but after that it's like a photograph of someone you've actually met. And so there's no big difficulty in keeping that refuge commitment, you know, because the you see this picture and you say, wow, I know that. I've experienced this thing. I know I've met an enlightened being. So really, for the first time in your life, you confirm that enlightened beings exist. And these are what happened to you. These are the Four Noble Truths, okay? Those experiences that happen to you during those 12 hours, say, until you go to sleep that night, are called the altogether are called the four Arya truths, meaning the four truths of a person who's seen emptiness directly. We'll talk more about that in class 6. You can't miss class 6, okay? I don't know when it happens, like 3 days from now or something, but you have to come to class 6, okay? So the rest of the time you can have diarrhea and stuff like that, but in class 6 you gotta come here and have it, okay? we'll have a special section. I just want you to get that feeling. The reason for us to meet here, the reason for, I'm not an enlightened being. I don't know how many there are here. I'm grateful that you let me teach because I really enjoy it. And I love to talk about these things. I don't know how many people here have seen emptiness directly. But for those of you who may not have, okay, this is like the holiest thing you can talk about. And if I had to choose one thing to talk about at Bodh Gaya, you know, I've never been here before, and talk about this thing, I want you to really get the feeling that it's something you can do. You know what I mean? This is not something that you have to be Tibetan, or you have to have a shaved head, or you have to have a bell and something, or you know, you have to have slanty eyes, or you know, you have to be different than what you are. Every person sitting here today, if you study the content of what I'm going to teach seriously, if you listen carefully, you could have this experience, and it could happen to you. You just need someone to explain it to you clearly without all the, you know, what do you call it? Literally. And strange words and strange expressions and things like that. Any normal Western person, given the correct instruction and the correct effort from their side, it's just the beauty of the way the Tibetans have preserved things and the lineage and the actual realizations of people running around is that you can do it. And so don't think, I'm not here to teach Tibetan, I'm not here to teach Sanskrit, I'm not here to, try to teach you the 14 categories of this or that, although we will do that. I just really want you to get from the first moment that we talk that you yourself can have the experiences that I described just now if you do what this course describes. That's all. Okay, so you really have to try to listen carefully and think of it as an opportunity to learn very clearly what you have to do to have that experience yourself, and think about that as your goal, okay? I ask you to do homeworks, okay? That's just something we started in New York like 15 years ago. People used to come to my class year after year after year. We did the whole Diamond Color Sutra word by word in a hotel room with 14 people on the bed, and I sat on the dresser, you know, the only units. But nobody really remembered everything after 1 month. You know, I had to keep going over and over, like those poor lamas who get stuck in Boston or Oklahoma and have to go to Lama Rim over and over and over, you know. And I got tired of it, and then I said, now you have to learn it, you know. So we made this homework system. And in New York, you get kicked out of the class if you miss more than two homeworks for that course. And then they sneak in anyway, but... But anyway, just do it, okay? I have lots of people come up to me and say, I haven't done that kind of monkey business since I was in high school, and I don't want to do it anymore. And I say, just do it, okay? You will be glad later. All those people come up, they send me love letters months later. You know, I finally learned something and retained it and actually remember all that stuff, and I'm using it, you see? So don't be... Don't doubt it, okay? Take notes, take careful notes, you know, and regurgitate it into the homework papers. And then really, my only goal in that is to try to get you to see emptiness directly, okay? And after that happens, you know, there's only two mental, well, three, but two main mental afflictions that you lose forever when you see emptiness directly. One of them is doubt about Buddhism, okay? The moment you see emptiness directly and have those experiences that I described, so who's going to come up to you and tell you anything else, you know? You are Mr. Know-it-all, okay? Or Miss Know-it-all, okay? And who's going to talk to you? What do you care about anything in the world if you've seen your next seven lifetimes and you've seen your own enlightenment? So who's going to tell you? You become very stubborn, actually. And who's going to, you know, you open a Buddhist book, you've just understood the contents of every Buddhist book there is. You know, the whole canon, the whole, I don't know, it's 100,000 pages of the Kangyur. And you just saw directly the meaning of it. So who's going to... Who can talk you out of Buddhism? Who can talk you out of that thing, you know? You've seen an enlightened being directly, and you know what you saw, and you know what you're going to be, and you can reach that point, and it's called the destruction of doubt. You can never have doubt again in your mind about what you're doing, why you're doing it, who you are, who you're going to be. And imagine going throughout your life, imagine what it's like to live another 30, 40 years and know what's going to happen, you know, and know what you're going to be. Imagine what it feels like to know certainly who you are, what's important to do with your life, and that. And at that time also, it's very typical to have your first direct experience of bodhicitta, and then to have that, you know, to walk around with ultimate compassion, to live dharma, and act out the Dharma 24 hours a day, constantly, effortlessly, and to know what you're going to be, then what else does a person need in their life? You see, I mean, you can get fed or don't get fed, or... By the way, by that time your karma's pretty good already, so I mean, stay, okay? And imagine that you could reach that, okay? And that's the purpose to have this teaching, okay? It's a very holy place to have it. Best place, okay? The real name of this place is Vajrasana, seat of the diamond. That's the real... Bodhgaya came... I don't know who made that up. Okay? This is the diamond. This is the place of the diamond, okay? So, we'll do diamond cutter, all right? I'm going to do the name first. I think someone else is going to help, right? If you're in places where you can't see, okay? If you have any inkling that you might learn Tibetan, then, you know, even Latifa, where's Latifa? She can write the Tibetan that I write on the board. Like, I taught it in Australia. She came out afterwards and showed me these beautiful pages of Tibetan. So, you know, she's the shortest person here right now. Anybody, if you think you might learn Tibetan, then write the Tibetan. If not, at least write the pronunciation, okay? But, you know, sit there fooling around with it, why not, you know? I just did a 16-hour sitting in a train station waiting for the train, and then a 11-hour drive when it didn't come. And so, you know, learn some Hindi on the way. I learned like 10 new words. Okay. All right. We're going to need a thicker... The first Dalai Lama, I often tell you, in his commentary on the Abhidhamma Kosha, says you should always put some foreign words up on the board, and then they think you know what you're talking about. Okay. They asked him why he put Sanskrit at the beginning of his books. That's what he said. And I'm going to ask you to repeat the sounds, okay? You don't have to become a Tibetan scholar. If you do, it's cool. There's 200,000 holy books you can read. It's like finding out about science fiction. You know, I mean, no, it's like suddenly your mom tells you, look, here's 10,000 books you could read that I didn't tell you about. You know, you're like... And every one of them is extraordinary. Every single one of them is absolutely 100% true. And if you could just crack one open anytime you feel like it and sit there and read Jetsam Kapa's explanation of Naropa's six holy yogas that you could do every morning and you know, have something new to do in the morning, and you could just sit there and pop open these books, 200,000 of them, anytime you feel like it. It's not that big a deal to learn, okay? It's not that hard, okay? So try. Say, Dorje. Chipa. Dorje? Chipa. Ask you to repeat it, and repeat it, you know, with the chutzpah, okay? Because it's good, it sticks in your brain, okay? In the monastery, they make you yell things that you have no idea what they mean, and then 20 years later it comes, okay? Say, Dorje? Chipa. Dorje means diamond, okay? Do means stone. Je means... Lord, like Je Tsongkhapa, means Lord Tsongkhapa. So Dorje means the king of stones, which is a diamond. Okay. Chepa means cutter. Okay, diamond cutter. Thank you. Hanjana. Not Hanjana. Okay. Bakla. Diamond cutter. Anyone in this class who's caught calling it the Diamond Sutra has to run around the wall three times, okay? It's a very bad translation, okay? The Sanskrit name, I'll just put it here for it, just so you know. It's Vajracharaka. Vajra's diamond. And Chetaka is cutter. Okay. Okay. I want to talk about the meaning of the name, okay? And it's very, very important. It's interesting that the word, you know, we've put it in the diamond cutter in the computer and done all these linguistic analysis of it, a couple of versions of it. The word diamond doesn't appear in the Diamond Cutter Sutra. There's no reference at all to cutting diamonds in the whole sutra. So why do they call it diamond cutter? All right, and it's very, very important that you understand why it's called diamond cutter. Okay, I described to you the path of seeing, and the first half of that is in a state of deep meditation. You see emptiness directly. Okay. By the way, during my time, it's called chula chushakpa. Say chula chushakpa. Means pouring water into water, meaning you can't be aware that you're seeing emptiness, okay? You can't be aware of yourself because you're seeing ultimate reality and you is not ultimate reality. You is normal reality, okay? Your skin, your bones, yourself, your name, your mind, these are all not ultimate reality, okay? So you can't have a thought, a conceptual thought. You can't say anything. What do you call it? You talk to yourself in your mind? Discursive thought. You can't have a discursive thought. You can't say what? I saw it. Okay? You can't do that while you're seeing emptiness, because that's not ultimate reality. That sound or that thought of those words is not ultimate reality. All you can do is be in communion with ultimate reality. That's all. You know, all these visions you ever had in your mind when you heard about Moses in front of the burning bush or something and being in communion with God or something like that, it's a lot like that. You know, you're just in direct communion with this force called emptiness, and you can't be aware of anything else, because then you'd pop out of it. You see, that's ultimate reality, and everything else is not ultimate reality. We'll talk about that more later, but you are just in the direct perception of ultimate reality. Are you still a subject and an object? We'll talk about it later. You are. The point of saying that it's non-dualistic or something like that, which I hate the word, is that you can't be aware of yourself while you're seeing it. That's all. You're still an object. I'm sorry. You're still a subject. It's still an object. But you just can't be aware of the distinction during that time, because that's not ultimate reality. That distinction's not ultimate reality. Okay? We'll talk more about that later. Anyway, when you come down out of that 20, 30 minutes, and you're sitting there, and you say, you know, God damn it, you know, I did it, you know, and I mean, all these thoughts start coming in your mind. I call it popcorn, you know, like, you wouldn't have one of these thoughts in 30 years, and you're having dozens on this day because of the power of emptiness, and these things are just happening in your mind, like, you know, you're seeing your future, you're having direct experience of bodhicitta, you're reading other people's minds directly, you know, and all these things are happening to you. And then you have this thought, oh my gosh, what if I forget what I saw? You know, I gotta remember what I saw. You know, I don't know how often I can pull this off. And if it's once in 10 years, that's fine, okay? That's great. And you say, I gotta remember what happened to me. So you say, what's the closest thing in the world to emptiness? You see what I mean? What's the closest thing in the normal world to what I saw directly? And then you come up with diamond. Okay? Every Arya who ever existed, every person who ever saw emptiness directly, has this thing about diamonds after that. You see? And there are three reasons, okay? That's why this place is called the seat of the diamond, Vajra Asana. It's not called Bogaya. Okay, none of it. It's called Dorje Den in Tibetan, the seat of the diamond. That's why this place is called seat of the diamond. That's why diamond is so important in Tantra, because emptiness is the basis of Tantra. And that's why we have this fixation with Vajras and diamonds. Okay, so when you come out of it, you're searching your life and your world for something to compare to emptiness, and diamond is the closest thing. Okay, so that's why diamond is so important. Okay, what's the reason? We can give three reasons, okay? First one, it's totally clear. Every object in the world has its own emptiness, okay? So Michael Roach has Michael Roach's emptiness. Possess my emptiness. My eye has its own emptiness. My eyebrow has its own emptiness. Each hair in my eyebrow has its own emptiness. Each part of the hair in each eyebrow has its own emptiness. Each part of the eyebrow has its own emptiness. Every single object around here, your thoughts, your names, you, the tent, the place, every atom of dust on the ground, they all have their own emptiness. So, you know, emptiness is not so rare. You know, it's like a billion emptiness is sitting on you right now. Okay, it's not like it's a big deal. It's not like there's only one emptiness and you gotta go somewhere and try to look, see it. You know what I mean? There are billions of emptiness. Every single object in the universe has, including thoughts, and including ideas and concepts like me, has its own emptiness. So it's all around you all the time. You just can't see it. You see what I mean? And it's frustrating. I mean, it's frustrating some guy get up and say, guess what, stupid? You know, emptiness is all around you. And if you just saw it for 20 minutes, you'd be out of here. You know, and you could meet all the Buddhas and seven lifetimes, you're totally enlightened yourself, and you're sitting on emptiness, and your butt is emptiness, and your nose is emptiness, and your health has its own emptiness, and you can't see it, you see. And diamond is the same. Diamond is so perfect. You know, I used to be a diamond, in the diamond, 15 years in the diamond business, all these gemological degrees that I had to finish, you know. It's totally clear. Its refractive index, the way it handles light, is such that if there was a diamond wall 10 feet thick between you and me, you couldn't see it. You see, unless the light were bouncing off the front of it, if there was no light to bounce off the front of it, and there was a diamond wall between you and me, you couldn't see it. You'd think it wasn't there. Like glass doesn't have this quality. If you look down a glass window pane, it looks green because of iron impurities in the, it's soaking up the blue and the red, and you see green. Okay? And then if you turn it this way, you can see through it. But diamond, if you had a piece a mile long and you look down the edge of it, you just see nothing. Okay? It's pure. It's totally pure. So in that sense, diamond is close to emptiness. Okay? Emptiness is all around you. It's been around you for your whole life. If you saw it directly for 20 minutes, any one of those emptinesses, you'd be out of here. You'd be well on your way to being enlightened. You would see your own mind directly. But it's like diamond. It's just totally invisible to us. Okay? So that's the first reason that diamond is similar to emptiness. Okay? Second one. And that's why they call the scripture the diamond cutter. Who came along and gave it that name? We don't know. Okay? Sabuni goes to the Lord Buddha in the scripture and says, what are you going to call this teaching? And Lord Buddha says, how about perfection of wisdom? He doesn't say diamond cutter. Okay? Somebody has put diamond, somebody who knew has put the name on it, the proper name on it. Okay? I'm not suggesting that it came later. I'm suggesting Lord Buddha gave it that name, and there's a reason for that. Okay? Number two, diamond, this is maybe the most important one, okay, number two. Of all the things in the world, a diamond is the closest to being something which is ultimate. What does ultimate mean? You know, you talk about ultimate reality, and it becomes a boring word, a cliche. You know, you say, oh, see ultimate reality, everything will be all right, you know. You say, yeah, cool, you know, and then they say, what's ultimate reality look like, you know, and they say, you know, it's ultimate. You know, and then what does it mean when you say something's ultimate? It means the most something, okay? The most, okay? Like, what would be the ultimate tallest guy? He'd be the most tallest, the most tall guy, okay? Okay? Or what would be the longest thing in the world would be ultimate, you see? But think about it. That means you couldn't add another to it. Okay, is there such a thing? Is there an ultimate thing as far as long? No. Okay? Unless it's Manasota's teachings or something. Okay. But, I'm not just kidding. I'm preparing you, so if I run over, you won't complain. Anyway, there's nothing like ultimately long. You can't say that. Ultimately short. No. You can always cut off more. You can always cut it in half. You see what I mean? Ultimately old. No, you gotta live another day, you know? Ultimately bad. No, there's that guy at work, you know? So, there's not ultimately anything. You see, nothing is the most of anything in the world, in what we call normal reality, as opposed to ultimate reality. By the way, you've never been out of normal reality. You've never experienced anything else. You live in it, you swim in it, you think that's all there is. You've never seen anything else. You've never met anybody who could convincingly describe anything else to you. That's all you've ever seen. And you probably, if you're over like 20 by now, you think that's all there is. You really believe that what you've seen is about all there is. You see, I mean, you almost can't believe somebody stand up here and say, you haven't seen half the things in the world. You know, there's something wrong with you. You didn't practice properly. And if you did follow instructions of the lineage, you suddenly half the things in the world that you've never seen would suddenly be seen. You see, I mean, that's... There is this thing, ultimate reality. It's half of the world, half of the universe is ultimate reality. You haven't seen it yet, okay? So the diamond is the closest thing. Okay, why? It's the hardest thing naturally occurring in the universe, period. Okay? It's just, by the way, if you take a pencil and you write on a piece of paper, it's also carbon, pure carbon. Diamond is pure carbon. But pencils have this lousy atomic structure where they're really strong this way, like horizontally, but really weak vertically. So when you write on a piece of paper, it's like little scales coming off, like shell, stone, or like croissant pastries or something. And it's little pieces of carbon are breaking off, and if you could magnify it, it would be these, it'd be like these flat plates of carbon spread across the paper, okay? And that's, but if you like take that same carbon, you raise it to like 2500 degrees Fahrenheit, you put so much G's of pressure on it with a piston, it'll turn into diamond, you see what I mean? And it just sort of restructures itself into a perfect, molecularly perfect form that no other substance in the universe has, period. It is, the next hardest thing, by the way, is ruby and sapphire, corundum, and it's like 30,000 times less hard, you see what I mean? Like, diamond is ultimate. Diamond is really, really close to ultimate. Diamond is really close to being the ultimate thing in the world. You can't cut a diamond. There's no such thing, okay? Really what happens in the diamond business is you have this plate that spins around like an old record player, and you put olive oil on it, and you smash a diamond, which you can do, because they have cleavage, but they don't have, okay? And then you sprinkle the dust on the wheel, and then you hold it on a special arm, and you force it down on the wheel, and it starts to scream, and it turns fluorescent red. And if you don't do it right, it goes right through the wheel. It just cuts right into the wheel, and the wheel, just falls apart, because it's the hardest thing in the world. And if you get it right, it has a weak direction like a piece of wood. It has lines like pieces of wood, and you get this one's lines against this one's lines, and then you can rub off pieces of diamonds if you sit there all day. Like, to make one little diamond takes a guy in Bombay about maybe 2 to 3 days. What I'm saying is they're really hard. Okay? Like, ultimately, they're almost... Anyone who's seen emptiness directly has this thing about diamonds. Okay? They are the closest thing in your reality to an ultimate thing, okay? They are close to being something which is the most of anything. How close is it, we'll talk about later, okay? Third quality. Every piece is totally equal. This is called Nyambanyi in Tibetan. Nyambanyi means totally equivalent. And what it means is the emptiness of every object in this room is exactly the same as every other emptiness in its quality, okay? It's 100% pure, unadulterated, ultimate reality. And if you took the emptiness of a wart on your nose and you took the emptiness of Lord Buddha's omniscience, they're equivalent, okay? They are each 100% not something which exists from its own side. And we'll talk more about that. Don't worry about it. Okay? But the emptiness of the worst thing you can think of, the road from here to Varanasi, and the emptiness of Lord Buddha's mind, or His Holiness's mind, or Lama Sopa's holy teachings or something, and you compare them, they're 100% equivalent. Okay? The same. They're called Nyambanyi, totally equal. Okay? In their quality. What's their quality? They are 100% not a self-existent thing. They are 100% the absence of something which has its own nature. But we'll talk about that later. Okay, don't worry about it. What's it got to do with diamonds? They used to go in the diamond mines in South Africa before they dug the mines, and farmers would come to the diamond buyers with these big diamonds, and they'd say, is this a diamond, you know? And they'd say, no. And they'd say, you sure? And they'd say, no, look, you can take a hammer and they break it, you see? You can split a diamond, but you can't scratch a diamond. You see what I mean? Because they have this cleavage thing. So, like you see the guys, if you just tap it like that, it'll split into two halves. So they would actually just split it and tell the guy, see, it's not a diamond. And the guy would leave, and then they'd pick up all the pieces and sell them. You know? So we would break a diamond into 1,000 pieces. Every little piece, we call doji sekma, every drop of diamond is pure, 100% atomically perfect carbon, arranged in an atomically perfect way. Okay, if you had a diamond the size of this tent, or you had a diamond the size of the pores under one of your hairs, chemically they're 100% total diamond. And the emptiness of every object is 100% the same as every other kind of emptiness. Okay, what is it we'll talk about? Okay, 100% the same. Okay, and those are the three reasons why a diamond is close to emptiness. Okay. And you will know that the day you see emptiness directly. And you'll be obsessed by it the rest of your life. You know, it would be worth it to go and work in a company for 12 hours a day for the rest of your life just to be close to a diamond. Just so you could remember. In fact, you'd probably want to do that so you wouldn't forget. You know, every day on the bus home you'd say, why the hell am I going to this stupid job? You say, oh yeah. It was so I could be close to a diamond, you know, and you know, that would be worth the rest of your life, 12 hours a day. It'd be well be worth to sit there if you just remembered that once a week or something. You see what I mean? It'd be worth all that time. Forget the money. If you had to pay them to go there, it'd be worth it. For the rest of your life, it'd be worth it just to be there and remember what you saw once a week or once a month or something. You would happily do it. Just to remember what you saw. Okay. So why didn't they call it the Diamond Sutra? Why did they call it the Diamond Color Sutra? It's close but no cigar. Okay. Close but no cigar means diamond is very, very close to emptiness. It's the closest thing. If you say, oh, you know, I guess you might have given me the closest thing to emptiness. I say, go get yourself a diamond and keep it for the rest of your life, you know. Drill one into your teeth so you see it every morning when you brush your teeth or something. You know what I mean? So you don't forget. But be aware that it's not close at all. Okay? It is the closest thing, and it's nothing compared to emptiness. Okay? Like, it's close to being ultimate, and emptiness is a billion miles away from that. So in a sense, emptiness cuts the diamond. You see? Diamond color doesn't mean some guy sitting there cutting a diamond. It means diamond is inferior. Okay? Diamond is the closest thing in the world, and it ain't nothing compared to emptiness. Okay? So emptiness cuts the diamond. You see what I mean? They should have called it cutting diamond or something like that. You see what I mean? Compared to emptiness, diamond is nothing. But if I ask you what's the closest thing in the normal world after you came out of it, you'd say diamond. Okay? Because there's nothing else that's even close. I'll do questions later, okay? Later. I'm out of theme, you know. I forget. I'm an old man now. So emptiness cuts a diamond, okay? And you must call the scripture the diamond cutter. Lord Buddha called it Vajracchedaka, and Chedaka means cut it, meaning diamond is close, but diamond is the best thing we have to talk about to explain emptiness to, and it's not close at all. Okay? It's nothing like ultimate reality. Okay? 20 minutes with a diamond would just get you, I don't know, in debt. Okay? 20 minutes in ultimate reality, you saw your own enlightenment in the future. Okay? I'd like to stop there just because I want you to digest that. And what I usually do when I teach, I like to take a break in the middle of the class. So like 5-10 minutes, get up, walk around. And in the coming days, please bring something with you that you can eat or drink. We couldn't get it together. We didn't have the manpower to to give you like everybody tea during this break, although you have it during the break between classes. So, you know, in the next few days, try to just bring something with you, okay? We'll take a 10, 15 minute break. When you hear the gong, please come back quickly because I might not be able to cover something that will trigger your perception of emptiness next week if we don't start on time, okay? And if you have a question, or if you have a, no, if someone has a personal thing or, okay. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Okay. If someone has a, you know, I don't have time to see all the people who want interviews because we're gonna, I'm going into retreat, so I'm trying to cover all the people that are, their 3 years of practice questions. So, but if you just want to barge in, usually there's 5, 6 people that glom on me, and then you just barge in and sit down. I'll be sitting up here, okay? And you have like a question you wanted to ask, or you had something in your mind, don't be shy, okay? It's a really good chance. It's the best chance in the next few years, I think. So don't feel shy at all. If you have something you want to talk about, just catch me during this break, okay? So see you in about 10-15 minutes, okay? I will do the boring part. The reason I didn't do it before is because if you've never heard me teach, then I was afraid you would leave after that. Okay. This comes from a story. I studied in Dharamsala 25 years ago, and I took my first Tibetan class, and they were teaching Master Shantideva's Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. In Tibetan, it's called Chunjuk, okay? And so I studied it for a few weeks, and then I went to Patankot train station, and I'm waiting for a train with one British friend of mine, and we saw all these Tibetans rushing into this room just before the train is coming, and we got all excited, and we said, who's in there? And Sanjay Ling Rinpoche, you know, Yamantaka himself, senior teacher of the Dalai Lama, you know, and we ran to the market, the train is coming, you know, and we bought these cakes, and we burst into his waiting room, and he's sitting there, you know, and the director of the library was standing behind, this is where I'm studying, behind him, you know, and so Ling Rinpoche says, what are you doing, you know, and he said, we're studying in the Tibetan, you know, and he said, oh, very good, you know, and then, how long, and he said, oh, for a while, you know, and then he said, what book are you studying, and then, you know, we didn't know the name of the book. And then the director of the library is behind him, and he's going. So he said, "Ginger." He said, "Very good." You know, and so I heard he got reincarnated. So you should know the name of the books that you're going to study. Okay. There's in Tibetan language. It's just good to know your lineage and to know I'm going to teach especially from one special commentary. The sutra which you will see is very, very, very difficult. To find the meaning of the sutra is very difficult. It's not like any other sutra. It's a little bit like the Heart Sutra, but it's more difficult. And there's only been one Tibetan commentary. Okay, that we've been able to find so far. We've input on the computer like 150,000 pages of Tibetan Buddhist books, but we've never, and we've gone to Mongolia and many other countries and looked at hundreds of thousands of books. We've only found one commentary, and we found it in St. Petersburg, Russia library. And this is what you're studying, okay? We recovered it from there. It was input at Sarah Monastery, and we translated it for the course, about half of it, and we're working on the other half. But this is a commentary by Chone Dakpa Shedup. And you should know what you're studying, okay? Or else avoid train stations, okay? Say Chone Dakpa Shedup. Chone Drakpa Shedup. If you're lazy and you can't remember names very well, just say Chone Lama. Okay? Chone is a part of Ambo. And it's just there's a Chöne monastery there, and there's some monks. Those of you who know Geshe Thupten Tenzin in Australia, he's from Chöne. They talk like that. They talk kind of funny, all right, in Tibetan, but you can almost understand them. Bam. Okay. Then Dapa Shedup is the monk's name. His dates are, I think it's, let me see. And his writings were part of the textbook series for Sera Mae Monastery, which is the sister college of Sera Jay. And they were all kept in the Sera Mae library in Lhasa. That library was shelled by artillery in March of 1959 and destroyed completely. And almost all the copies of his books were burned. There was one set was sent to Russia before that, and we found it in the library there. So we have this commentary, and that's the main commentary we'll be using. Okay, I'm going to give you the Tibetan name of the commentary. The book's name is Thailam Nyima. Say Thailam Nyima. Thailam Nyima. Thai is the Italian fire, fardo, fapa, that they miswrite. Tapa means nirvana, okay, or freedom. Thai means freedom. Lam means path, like Lam Rim. Nyima is a common Tibetan name, and it means sun, the sun in the sky. So it means the sun, sun, what should I say? Sun which... Can you fix it? Yeah. Maybe move this one? Maybe that. So it means sunlight on the path of freedom. Okay? There are two other commentaries in the canon, okay, from Sanskrit. And I want to just give you the names of the authors. They're pretty famous dudes. And you should know them. Okay, one is Kamalashila, Master Kamalashila. He's about 750 A.D. His Holiness, for example, in New York, was teaching, famous for his works on meditation, how to meditate, Gomrim, the stages of meditation. It's a huge volume in the canon about how to meditate. So he's also the guy who, I'm not going to tell the whole story today, but he... the Tibetans were trying to decide what kind of meditation they would do. And there were Chinese monks in Tibet who said that people should do Chiang Mei. Chiang Mei means try to meditate about nothing. Try not to have any thoughts in your mind. And then the Indian masters on meditation, like Kamalashila, were coming and saying, no, there's three kinds of meditation. One is like analysis. One is like fixed meditation. Right. Review meditation, and these are all content. There's some content. You're either picturing something, or you're thinking about something, or you're following some kind of outline or something like that. In other words, you're not just sitting there and spacing out, okay? So, the king of Tibet, we'll have a debate, and whoever wins will do that kind of meditation in Tibet for the rest of history. Guess who won? Anyway, that's Kamalashila. Now, that's what he's famous for, but he did write a commentary on the Diamond Cutter. It's from the mind-only school viewpoint, and so it's quite difficult. It's very difficult. So we'll be referring to it, but we won't use it much. By the way, if you're interested in this kind of stuff, which is very sexy, mind-only, we're going to be going to Sera Monastery shortly after this teaching ends and studying with the greatest master of the mind-only school in the world, as far as I know. Geshe Thupten Rinchen. He's going to be, we did last year the mind-only section of a particular text by Tsongkhapa, and this year we're doing, comparing that to the Middle Way school. And he's going to teach that. Last time he did 5 hours a day for like 3 weeks or something. And he's intense and beautiful, really beautiful. So I'll be doing simultaneous translation, and you're welcome to hang, you're welcome just to come along if you like, okay? It's a beautiful train ride, and that's called figurative as opposed to literal. Okay, and that's actually what we'll be studying there, the difference between figurative and literal in philosophy. Okay, and then the other one is Master Vasubandhu. DHU looks better to me. Okay. Anyway, Lopun Yingyan, who we studied for 10 years, 350. He's famous for writing the Abhidhamma Kosha, okay, and some other works on mind only. And he wrote a commentary to the Diamond Cutter, which we have. Okay, so those two commentaries we have from the Sanskrit. I'll be referring to them briefly, but not much, okay? They're very specialized, and we are going to treat it more from the highest middle way viewpoint, which is the one that you would use to see emptiness directly, most directly, okay, and the one you use for tantric practice, okay? There's a very interesting mention of a third commentary in the Kanju that we just found, and it says, the third commentary, we don't know who wrote it, and we haven't found it yet. and we were tearing all over looking for it, and then we figured out that the person who put together the canon, which is Bhutan Rinpoche, knew of this commentary but couldn't find a copy as of press time when they carved the Kangya, okay, like 1730, the Derge Kangya. So they just left it out, and we don't know where it is, okay? But those are all there are. We're not aware of any other commentaries in Sanskrit or Tibetan, okay? Okay. I think that covers your homework. Let me see. Yeah, just one more thing to talk about. I want to set the scene for you, okay? And then we'll start the actual sutra in the next class. I want you to know how the sutra starts. There's a place called Shravasti. It's in modern UP state. It's about 2 days' drive from here. And there's a special garden there called Jetavana. And there's this story, there's this king named Gome Sejin, which means he who gives food to people who don't have any other helper, okay? Something like Ananta Pindata or something. And he, it's in your text, okay? And he arranged to have this garden donated to Lord Buddha. And the person who owned it refused to sell it unless the person could cover the garden in gold coins. Like, you know what I mean? Like, next to each other. And they did it. And they gave the gardens to Lord Buddha. And they were discovered by an English archaeologist earlier in this century. And they've been dug up and restored. And a pretty wild place. Lord Buddha spent 24 Yarnes there, the summer retreat, and he taught there many, many scriptures, and that's where he taught the Diamond Cutter Sutra. So you can actually go there nowadays and see the actual platform that he sat on when he taught the Diamond Cutter. It's there, and it's really intense place, okay? So that's the gardens of Jeta was the prince who helped arrange the, and Van means like a garden or a glade, okay? So this is where the thing takes place. He's hanging out there. Like I think a couple of 3 years after his enlightenment, he started to spend time there. And then people would go. On this particular occasion, over 1,000 monks have showed up to take a teaching from Lord Buddha. And there's one of them named Subhuti. You got to know his name. In Tibetan, his name is Rabjorn. I'm just going to put the pronunciation. And in Mongolia, when I was growing up, we had a monk called Grukchor. And that's Rabjorn Subhuti. Okay? And Subhuti is this very interesting character. He keeps showing up in sutras. You know, sutras are named different ways, but sometimes they're named the sutra that was requested by so-and-so, and what will happen is Lord Buddha will be sitting around here having a cup of tea, and, you know, Paul DaCosta will come up and say, yeah, we have this question about the diamond thing, you know, and then they will trigger a conversation, which is a sutra. So a sutra means like a short discussion, really. The word means that. So, you know, it's really just the same way that it's happening today. You see, like, it wasn't even this formal. Like, Lord Buddha's sitting there, he just finished his meal, you know, his morning meal, his only meal of the day, and he brushed his teeth and sat down, and he's sitting there, and Subhuti comes up. Subhuti's always the guy. He comes up, and he breaks into the circle, and he says, what about this? You didn't come to that, you know. And so in Tibetan monasteries, if they call you Subhuti, it's kind of an insult. It means someone who's, like, interrupting the class all the time, which is very, you know, not allowed, actually. But someone would be called Subhuti in that case. So Subhuti is the... They call him Sedan Dhamma. Throughout the whole scripture, he's called Sedan Dhamma. Sedan Dhamma means junior monk, Subhuti, okay? And he keeps asking questions, like he's got a thing, you know? He wants to know about emptiness. So he's asking Lord Buddha, you know, how do we do this emptiness thing? What does it mean? What are we supposed to do, you know? And the question he asks... For those of us who have entered the path of a bodhisattva, those of us who are trying to practice Mahayana Dharma, we're trying to learn compassion, we're trying to understand what it means to give your life to other beings for the rest of your life, those of us who are on that path, where are we going? Live? How are we supposed to practice? And how are we supposed to sing? Okay? And he asked us three questions. Okay? How are we supposed to live? Jita me par gyur. How are we supposed to practice? Jita me par gyur. And jita sambar gyur. How are we supposed to think? Okay, so that's what triggers the sutra. Alright? And you should have that in your mind, okay? 1,000 people sitting around. Lord Buddha's up there on this platform called Dharma Darshana platform in Jetavan. And he's up there, and then somebody's just throwing questions at him. And that's Subhuti, okay? And later on, they decided that that really Subhuti is Manjushri. Okay, this nitni guy who keeps interrupting Lord Buddha is actually Manjushri in disguise. And he's throwing out these questions between two enlightened beings who they know very well who they are, just to get things rolling. You see what I mean? Just to get this questions brought up. So you gotta be really careful in class when there's some like really irritating person who's like, well, what about that, you know? They might end up to be Manjushri. But Bhagavad Gita just says that in the Liberation of the Palm of Your Hands. Be careful with the person sitting next to you in a class because you never know who they really are. If Subhuti could be Manjushri, okay, then anything is possible. So he's triggered the sutra. How are we supposed to live? How are we supposed to practice? You know, how are we supposed to think about things? And then Lord Buddha goes into a long description. And you'll see throughout the scripture, Subhuti keeps asking questions. And they keep calling him Sotam Dhamma. Sotam Dhamma means junior monk, okay? And I was working on a translation recently, and in the last line it says, thus did the elder Subhuti speak. You know, and it's like a pun, a punchline, you know, it's like they're revealing who he really is. You see what I mean? Which is very rare for a sutra to be funny like that. You see what I mean? Especially this one, this is really heavy. And throughout the scripture, Lord Buddha is saying extraordinary things. And I'll give you an example, okay? Like, he'll ask Subhuti, say, well, how is Bodhisattva supposed to practice? And then Lord Buddha's going to say, they have to liberate people. They have to get people to nirvana, you know, and they have to get them to Buddhahood. And then Subhuti says, oh, I understand, thank you, you know. And then Lord Buddha says, I got a question for you now. So when you liberate all these people, do these people exist? You know? And then Subhuti says, well, no. Okay? And then the Buddha says, great, you got it. And he says, yeah, I know, they don't exist, and that's why we can call them people. And that's the pattern throughout the whole scripture, okay? You got Lord Buddha saying, what are those thoughts supposed to do? He thinks the Buddha, he says, oh, they got to liberate people. And then he says, well, you think those people exist? He says, no. He says, so is that a good thing? Yeah, that's why we can say they're people.
Because they don't exist, you know. And that, the whole future is like that, okay? So really, there's just one pattern. We have to do something good, right? And is that a good thing? Yes. It doesn't exist. No. And that's why we can call it a good thing, right? Right. Okay? And that's how the whole sutra goes, okay? Now, how does sutra stay going for 2,500 years with this long string of questions like that going on? We have to think about it, okay? I'm afraid that that throughout the centuries, and even in modern times, people misunderstand this completely. You know what I mean? Oh, nothing exists, you know? Buddha said, Diamond Color Sutra, Bodhisattvas don't exist, that's why we can call them Bodhisattvas, okay? And there's this misunderstanding of the sutra, and the misunderstanding of emptiness, year after year after year, century after century, people hearing something like kind of cool, and then thinking that Buddha meant, oh, emptiness means nothing exists, and you don't exist, so you have to meditate on nothing, okay? And go home and meditate on nothing after you don't eat anything, okay? And so, the reason I like this sutra is because it cleared up for me, being a normal Western person, having gone through my whole Dharma study like you guys, frustrated as hell about all these different weird explanations of emptiness. Some people say it's a black hole, you know. You close your eyes and you imagine something black, you know. And, like, that's the worst one, right? And then, even the monkeys are laughing. Other people say, oh no, just stop them, don't think about anything, you know. Just sit there and don't think about anything. This is Qigong main meditation. This is how we get to a hell realm, you know what I mean? In the Abhidharma, this is like, if you want to go to a hell realm, do this. Think about nothing for the rest of your life, you see what I mean? And like, some people say that's emptiness. Watch your thoughts flow away, and when they stop, you reach emptiness, you know? Come on! I mean, if that's the case, then all the old drunks you know have already seen emptiness, you know what I mean? It's not like that. There's a joke in the monastery, they're debating. Don't let me shut you, maybe you just... Teach it! Shut you up, a duck! What jungle can you say? Well, yeah, I saw emptiness, this is a green thing. A green aura in my mind, you know? And there's a joke in the monastery about that, you know? So all these strange explanations. Then you say people, I tell you emptiness. Is this a pen? Yes. Is it its pulse? Is the pen the top of the pen? We'll ask the expert, Latifa. No, serious, okay? Just answer. You ready? You're not shy. No. Is the pen the top of the pen by itself? She said, no. Okay. Is the pen this tent? No. Is the pen the top and all the parts together? She said no. Okay. That used to work. You're too tricky. You mean if you do all the parts of a car you put together, you don't have a car? Or a toy? Or a bike? She's gonna get back to us on that. Okay. Anyway. But I used to confuse the hell out of me. What are you talking about? Okay, I know the pen is not the top of the pen. Thank you. You know, I know it came from its causes. Thank you. You know, I know that, you know, it's not the tent or the pole or the light bulb. I know that. And then they say, but guess what? It's not all its parts together. I said, BS. Of course it is. You know, you get into a car after you put it together, right? And it drives you to Varanasi, you know. it works, but it's there. And there's nothing weird about that. And I don't see any emptiness about it. And then I say, no, this is, if you understand this, you don't have to have mental afflictions anymore. If you understand this, you won't get angry. You won't get jealous, like it's my problem. You won't, you know, like things, you want to do nothing wrong, you always think good thoughts. If you understand that this comes from causes, I know it comes from causes, I know it came from, which factory? Fabric or Japan? Made in Japan. Okay, I know it's made in it. I still have a mental affliction about it. You see, I mean, it doesn't help me. So I think the purpose of this class, we'll figure out in the next class that we'll have at 5 o'clock, okay? What do they mean when they say it's not those things? And why do they play games like that? And what's that supposed to mean to me, who's trying to get rid of my jealousy, which has caused me misery for all these decades of Michael Roach's life? You know, well, how does that help me? You see, I mean, what are you trying to say? Could you just say it clearly? You know, what is it about this thing that I'm doing wrong? You know, we feel guilty about everything in the West, and then you feel guilty about looking at things because they say you're doing something wrong, you know. And how's that going to help my jealousy, you know, or something like that, okay? So we ought to talk about that, and we'll do that in the next. It's in the Buddha's answer to Subhuti. How are we supposed to live? You know, how are we supposed to practice? How are we supposed to think, okay? After each class, we'll have some prayers, which Venerable Phyllis got a good voice, so I'm asking him to do the prayers. You'll get them in your book. The way the book is set up, the reading is that you just get it piece by piece, because I don't want you to read it before I talk about it, because we say the oral, the blessing of the oral tradition should come first, and then you get the book afterwards, okay? And then there's some kind of change in how you see the book, okay? So, I think it'll be, is it after? Should get it after this class, okay? Is that right, Elizabeth? Perfect? Dig it? Okay, yeah. Okay, and we'll stop there. And then please be serious about your homework. Do your homeworks during the break. And don't take it lightly. It really makes a big difference in whether you are going to have a good course. I'd also like to ask two more things of you. Okay, one is that you do your homework. Secondly, later we're going to pass out what we call the book. Okay, the book. You got the book? Let's see the book. Hand me this one. The book is like this thing. You heard of six session yoga. I used to think it was some kind of exercises. It's a requirement in every tantric initiation for Anuttara. You must do six session yoga. You know, I hate exercises. You know, so I was very reluctant to take that. Turns out it doesn't have anything to do with exercising, which is good. It's just six times a day you have to stop, check your vows, okay? How many vows do you have? If you're a fully ordained monk with bodhisattva vows and tantric vows, you have 484 different commitments. I once tried to check them all in one day. I started at 4 a.m. I didn't finish before 11 p.m. I didn't do anything else except eat a little bit and poop and stuff like that, okay? So you can't do that six times a day. But what you can do is check one six times a day, okay? Like you check number one at 8 o'clock, you check number two at 10 o'clock, and I'm going to teach you how to do that. But I ask you to keep that commitment for 5 days, okay? So, but I'll pass out those books later, and I'll show you how to do it. That's the second thing. And then third thing is ask you to meditate in the morning, okay? At least an hour. Either do it in your own home, your own place, or if you'd like to come here at 10:30, we'll be meditating here together, okay? So I ask you to do, please keep a small commitment for those 5 days, okay? Like if you want to come home, you got to do all this other stuff. This is easy, okay? Alright? So please try to do those three things. Homework, gonna show you how to do this six times a day, just for 5 days. I'm sure you won't have to do it after that. And then meditate at least 1 hour in the morning. Then you will have something happen in this class. Otherwise, just to sit and do homeworks is not enough, okay? All right, we'll do some prayers. And then I'll see you at 5, okay?
I'll do it.